Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Vulnerability Podcast. We're going to have a great time tonight. We've got great co-hosts and everything. And I want to introduce Matt Perry. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
Dr. John, I am doing fantastically tonight. As I was just letting you know, I have the blessing of having a beautiful BMW convertible. I was just driving around for about an hour here in Connecticut. It is beautiful. It is warm out. And that is the perfect way to lead into tonight's podcast. And with that said, I'd love to introduce our two other amazing co-hosts. First, I'd like to welcome the great Keith Posetti from the Wisconsin area. Keith, how are you doing tonight?
Meow. I'm great. I'm doing great. I didn't go on a little cruise in my convertible. I don't have a convertible. I have a little black Honda Civic. It's the new models, though, so they look pretty sexy with black tinted windows of the black car. It's pretty nice, but just doing a whole lot of yoga, watching a lot of YouTube videos on some aliens. So, yeah, thanks for asking. And then,
Awesome, Keith. Well, great to hear you're doing well, and maybe before you know it, maybe you can get a UFO as well. So maybe that would be a great way to lead in for next week, Keith. But thank you for joining us as always. And I'd like to turn over to Tori Kadri from Arizona. Tori, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, doing great. Yes, I'm in Surprise, Arizona. And, we're getting ready to do, my friends and I are getting ready to do a women's retreat in Sedona. So that's what we're doing, a lot of prep for that. It's going to be a lot of yoga, breath work, drum circles, and I'm going to do some massage. So it's going to be really a good time. It's going to be really fun.
That's awesome, Tori. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And with that said, let me turn it back over to you, Dr. John. Dr. John, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. It's been a beautiful day here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. The crowds are getting bigger. It looks like Myrtle Beach is reopening like it should be. So we're all very happy. We really are, and it's so good to be here with you folks and everything. So thanks a lot, and thanks for asking.
My pleasure.
So, Mr. Matt, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking, Dr. John. So, a lot of times we've been using topics in this amazing podcast series based on what we're discussing at times in the Vulnerability of School Project. And tonight we're going to be talking about insecurities and as it relates to hiding those imperfections and exuding a sense of perfectionism. So it's a really important topic in society because we tend to avoid being vulnerable, and then we only show the parts of ourselves that we think are most desirable. So with that said, I'd love to ask Tori. Tori, what are your thoughts on the subject?
I'm so sorry. I had my dog doing crazy things, so I missed part of it. Can you tell me the last part of that again?
Absolutely, Tori. My pleasure. So tonight we're going to be talking about insecurity and how we hide our insecurities through exuding a sense of perfectionism. So my question to you is, what are your general thoughts on this subject?
So I would have to agree that I have, at least in the past, done that a lot. I tend to think of myself as a perfectionist, and I often get down on myself when I feel even the slightest bit, like say for my work performance, if I feel like that's slipping a little bit because maybe I've been diving in a lot to my own personal development and growth and stuff. And then I feel like maybe my work is suffering a little bit because my focus is wandering a slight bit. So then I try to overcompensate, and then I'll end up working like a 14-hour day or something because I might have, you know, taken an extra hour at lunch or something. Like, I tend to do that, and I really do get very hard on myself if I don't do everything perfect. I mean, I know that people make mistakes, but and I allow a lot of leeway for everyone else, but for myself, it's always like, I really, really, really don't like making mistakes, especially public ones. So, yeah, I have a hard time with that myself, and I can really relate to it for sure.
Absolutely, Tori. And I think that that's a point we should certainly get back to, that I think I'd like to let Dr. John go and then Keith go, but I think that's something that we should definitely return to, this notion that we are so much easier on other people, but when it comes to ourselves, we hold ourselves to a much higher standard, to a point where it's almost unattainable to actually be a human being, because we hold ourselves to a level that if we were a robot, basically. And how can we be happy in that sort of an environment? So thank you, Tori. Is there anything you'd like to add before we go to Dr. John or Keith?
No, I think let them answer. I'm sure I'll have a lot more to say later.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tori. Well, Dr. John, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I am in the field of sales, and I am pretty darn hard on myself. I have to kind of mask it because, you know, as I'm out there, I have certain sales goals that I have to reach so that I can make a good living. And I'm always worried about it. People in graduate school used to call me Panicky John. That was a long, long time ago, but I think it was probably a good name. I'm always worried about, am I really performing up to the level that I should be? And so far, no one's ever had any complaints with me at my job. But I'm just always worried, am I doing the best job that I can? And frankly, I'm okay with it. I'm okay. I'm okay with being Panicky John and being worried about, am I really doing the best job that I can? Because if I'm not, I need to go do something else. So, and I'm in life insurance, which is one of the tougher fields, but it's one of the more rewarding fields. So I just think that it's okay for me. It's okay for me to be in that position. But I do have to be careful not to put too much pressure on myself, because if I do, I mean, bad things can happen. I mean, 8 weeks ago, I had a stroke. I did. And that was all from stress. So I've had to learn to balance what I do with reality. So that's what I've got to say on the subject.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. John. And I know I've mentioned this in the past, but we're sending you very good healing vibes, and it seems like you're making some tremendous progress. So I know I'm blessed for that. I'm blessed to always have us both being here together on this amazing podcast. And one question back to you. Do you feel that people
Sure.
who are more anxious or have a proclivity towards anxiety might be more apt to exude that level of perfectionism?
Well, here's what happens. I think what it does is it really keeps me on point, and it keeps me focused on what I'm supposed to do, which is sell life insurance. And as long as I do that, I'm going to be okay. So what it does is it keeps me focused, and I think focus is the key. You know, we somehow managed to get the job done. So I would say there's a balance there that has to be reached. But if you're in sales, it's a real risk/reward situation. So you've just got to go to it, and you've got to do your best, but you can't let things get to you so badly that it's going to cause a problem. I don't know. I hope I hope I answered the question.
Absolutely you did. And I think that kind of can go to another potential branch off here too, that, you know, in situations in life, everything is a decision. Everything requires a choice. If we get too risk averse, we can sort of go into that perfectionistic mode. And when you get into that perfectionistic mode, you can look at option A and you see 2, 4, 8, 12, you know, 100 different options. And then similarly, you can look at the same thing for option B, and then that prevents you from moving forward. That prevents you from taking action, and then you're sort of stuck in the same place because you're so terrified of taking that next step. So I think that's also something that we can probably look at tonight as well. So thank you, Dr. John.
Sure.
Keith, what are your thoughts
Absolutely.
On this subject?
It sounds like we could probably talk all night on this subject just based off of the tangents that we've already discovered here. But, I mean, as far as perfectionism in my life, you mentioned a little bit about anxiety and perfectionism. The two are actually very correlated in my experience. There's this saying that anxiety is suffering your imagination to the future because you're putting yourself into a situation and you're thinking about what's going to happen in this situation, how am I going to do it, and then you're going through all these scenarios. And perfectionism's a lot like that as well because, you know, in my life as a perfectionist as well, it's funny how many people actually have it. You know, I would always try and do things, and I want to do them right the first time. So before I would do something, I would do a lot of research into it, and I would do a lot of thought experiments into actually physically doing it before I would actually do it. And it kind of paralyzed me to do certain things in my life because I was overanalyzing everything. And it got me into trouble a couple of times, I'll say. You know, some situations I could have potentially have gone well for me, I butchered because I was so busy just thinking about all the things that could go wrong about it, and how I could prepare myself for it, and, you know, dive into all sorts of different solutions in my own head. But I mean, it's, you know, when John said something about stress too, I mean, it's part of the same damn thing ultimately.
You know,
stress
and I want to add something to that when you get done, Keith. Okay?
Yeah, that's great. That sounds great. I carry a lot of tension in my neck and in my shoulders and things like that because I have carried this backpack of bullshit I mentioned before in the Facebook group. You know, I've carried it for a long time, and I'm learning to drop some bricks out of it every now and then, but it still is there, especially with all of the with all the stress going on in the world with this COVID bullshit and other crap too, but you know how it is. So I've been carrying this backpack around for a long time, and I hold a lot of tension in my neck and my shoulders and my chest area. And it's hard to let go of. And that's the thing though too. It's not something easy to let go of. You know, it's like you lived your whole life thinking that you need to be a certain way, you know, like with the perfectionism, with the anxiety, with the stress. You know, you think that that's natural to be doing that, when in reality it's not. There's a lot of Braden, Bruce Lipton, Dr. Joe Dispenza, they talk a lot about this kind of stuff, how stress actually affects the body, and it doesn't allow your DNA to properly, it's called epigenetics, it doesn't allow your body to produce the proteins to keep yourself healthy. it keeps you in a stressed out state, and then that causes your genes to produce proteins that don't align as well with the natural function of your body, and it makes you ill and things like that. I mean, obviously, that's a very simplistic explanation to it, but we only got an hour here, and I think I've already been talking for a little while here. Dr. John, you said you wanted to add something?
Yes, I do. I worked for a brilliant man. He was a senior researcher at IBM, and then he came to the university, and he was actually my boss. And he called me into his office one day. He said, "You know, John, you act like you're always worried." I said, "Well, I am, because I'm always trying to figure out what I'm going to do if there's a problem." And he said, "You've got to stop that. And here's the way you have to handle life. You have to go through life and enjoy it. If a problem comes up, it's up to you to solve it. But don't try to create problems that may not come up. Don't try to create them in your head, because if you're a smart guy, you can take care of those problems." And I think that's really good advice. I think of it many times when I am worried. I say, you know, maybe I'm just kind of creating problems here. And so I try to uncreate them. I try to get divorced from them. And then if something happens, well, it happens. And I have to take care of it. But if it doesn't happen, I've had a good day. I hope that helped somebody.
Thank you.
I know it helped.
Thank
I know
you.
It helped me.
Dr. John. Thank you, Dr. Yeah. John. Yeah, and I know we've talked on these segments a number of times about ultimately we are the creators of our own reality. And for any of us, and I think all of us go into levels of perfectionism, but when we sit there and we ruminate over all these different options that we might be faced with, in some way we are creating that, right? We're creating the possibility for all those doomsday scenarios to actually play out. So the more that we can avoid engaging in that sort of negativistic thinking or, you know, panic thinking, I think the less that we can actually create those realities. So I totally agree with you, and I really appreciate that contribution, Dr. John. Keith,
it's
I want
like
to go
in
back.
Mad Magazine. Do you remember Mad Magazine when it was popular? And they had this picture of their boy, Alfred E. Newman. And there was this big question mark right over his head. And he said, "What, me worry? You know, maybe that's not such a bad idea." "What, me worry? Just take care of it when it happens. Otherwise, stop worrying." So I'll remember this tomorrow. I know it'll help.
Absolutely. Dr. Zahn, thank you so much. And it was funny, quick side tangent. I actually had my bowling coach. I know that Dr. John, you and I have talked about I bowled, and my bowling coach would always joke and call me like I was like the kid on the Mad Magazine. So I don't really know where he was getting that from. I just think maybe the way like my positive attitude or whatever just sort of made him have some recollection to that. But besides that, I'd like to go quickly back to Keith. You were talking about letting go, right? How do you personally let go of that negative thinking, that proclivity towards engaging in perfectionism?
That's a great question, actually. Thank you for it.
So I've done a lot of different things throughout the years. According to yoga philosophy, when something negative comes to your head, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to think the opposite of it. That doesn't really work too well for me. I don't really think the opposite too much. I just kind of learn to, you just need to really understand like who you are and what you want out of life, I would say. Now currently what I do is I do like affirmations and things like that. And it helps me to step out of my comfort zone, but it helps me to let go of a lot of trauma that I have in my heart. You know, I carry a lot of heavy shit towards people in my life because I was hurt so badly by people that were supposed to care about me. But I just learned to. I use Reiki energy and I send it to them, and I learned just to give love to it and learn to understand. Like even with yourself, you know, even though you have all these like high expectations of yourself, how much do you really know about life? You know, you need to be honest with yourself. I mean, we're all a bunch of, you know, even someone formally educated, someone that you consider very intelligent, someone that's truly wise is going to tell you they don't know like anything. And we live such short lives, and you know, roughly 90% of our life, our brains and bodies are functioning optimally if you're lucky, and then the rest of it, you're deteriorating, and you're not having the same function that you used to have. So you need to be honest with yourself and learn to laugh a little bit about it, because it's. As serious as life can be, it's really not all that serious, because it's not like we come out of it alive in the end, you know? You can choose to make your life a tragedy, or you can choose to make it a comedy. Sometimes it's a drama, sometimes it's an action flick, but you just need to be honest with yourself, and there's so many different methods about, you know, as you mentioned, letting go, that you can dig into. You just need to find the one that works best for you. So, I do a couple of different things, but that's mainly what I stick to. So thank you for the lovely question, Matt.
Absolutely. Thank you for the similarly lovely answer, Keith. And I think at this time I'll share my answer to the initial opening question here. And I appreciate each of your responses, and it's something that I know I do each of, right? And, you know, for me, you know, I have grown up in a society grown up in Connecticut, and the culture around here is very, very cookie cutter. Everybody is competing to be the best. It is keeping up with the Joneses on steroids here. The quality of life is high, but it comes at a cost. Everything has to be looked at in a lens of perfectionism. And, you know, I played in that game, right? I actually graduated valedictorian of my high school. I had all the accolades. That has come at a tremendous cost to myself with how I look at everything in life. And for years, I hid a lot of different aspects to me. I don't want to get too much into that because I think we're going to probably be moving on to that in the next segment or two here. But a lot of it was always, how can I strive to be the best? How could I make the quote-unquote right decision? Well, I can say one thing, that through my journey, through my healing journey, through my own spiritual, emotional growth, right is subjective. You can take path A and have the right choice, quote unquote. You can take option B, and that can similarly be the right choice. And as I'm saying it, I think that's also a reminder for myself and probably for many people that no matter what decision you ultimately make in life, there really truly isn't a right or wrong decision, because ultimately you will get something out of the decisions that you make. Is there anything that anybody would like to add on to anything I just said?
No, I mean, this is Dr. John. I think you did a good job with that. Excuse me. Yeah. I think you did a good job with that. You really did.
Thank you, Dr. John. So I kind of want to go to the next segment here, and I'd like to ask everybody, why are we easier on others than we are ourselves? I think that's something that I think we just sort of touched on a little bit earlier, but really, why is it? Why are we so much kinder with the people around us versus ourselves? Keith, I'd like to go with you first. Keith, what are your thoughts on this question?
Well, in my experience of looking into that question with myself, I'm harder on myself than others just because of the, you know, I've dug so deeply into so many different topics of information, and I guess the ego on me thinks I'm, you know, a highly intelligent human being. And when I'm making a mistake or something like that, it kind of upsets me. And it brings up like a bunch of trauma and things like that. And yeah. What else? Kind of drawing a blank right now, honestly. But I'm just really been hard on myself for a long time. I'm gonna turn the question over to somebody else.
Thank you, Keith. Dr. John, what are your thoughts on this question?
Well, okay, I guess I have to answer this one honestly. I was always the kid that had to make the A's in school. I made A's for 12 years, all the way up through, finishing high school. I was the kid that had to graduate with honors. So when I went to college, I was just told that that's what I was supposed to do. And it kind of stuck. And I found out graduate school was pretty damn hard. And when I got my first master's, I mean, I felt like I failed. Apparently I had a 3.2 in math at Wake Forest, my master's. And apparently that wasn't so bad. They actually thought I was a pretty good student. And then I went down to Clemson, and here came my big rollicking 3.7, which was the top GPA in that whole department in computer science. And then came NC State with my 4.07, which was kind of crazy that they gave A pluses, but I was glad to get it. And I guess I was just always told that that's what I'm supposed to do. And I don't know that it's such a bad thing. I mean, I was able to do it and not go through any kind of repercussions. You know, I didn't have any problems, any mental problems with it. But I was just always told I was supposed to be at the top of the class. And probably not a bad thing. It probably is not. I think it's okay. Does put pressure on you, but it's kind of like I'm in sales now. How did I pick sales? Well, it's kind of like it. And I know that if I don't perform, I'm not going to get a paycheck, but if I do perform, I will get a great paycheck. So I think it's a matter of conditioning. We're kind of taught a way, and then we learn it, and we do it. And I think that's that for me. Maybe it sounds like an oversimplification, but not really. It's a pretty personal experience. So there you go, Matt. There's some honesty for you.
Absolutely. And I thank you, Dr. John, for sharing that. I think there's a lot of correlation to what I was saying with my upbringing, right? I mean, I feel like how we're raised certainly has a big impact on how we behave, how we act. So if we're in an area or our family has values where ideals of perfectionism are celebrated, and that's going to play a major role in how we behave, right?
Yes. And it's like today, I don't have parents like I had. They've passed away. And so it's up to me to uphold kind of the standards that they taught me, and I'm fine with that. I mean, I think it's a good thing. At least it is for me, and that's what I've got to say. And that's one reason I'm on here, because, you know, Matt, you keep asking interesting questions, and you keep asking thought-provoking questions, and it's worth my time to try to come up with answers. It kind of fits the mold of what I'm used to. Quality. You know, I mean, there's an element of quality about this podcast. So there you go. And there's a compliment to you in the middle of it.
Well, I really appreciate that wonderful comment, Dr. John. And I'm have the privilege of, you know, sort of asking the questions tonight. So I really love this opportunity. So I appreciate that as well. You know, I know that we're sort of maybe coming at this from like an intellectual slash almost kind of negative, maybe quote unquote lens. Maybe that's a little too strong of a word as it relates to this perfectionism, but there are positives, I think, to having these values, right? It's that sort of an indefatigable nature. There's this motivation that you have, right? Because if you didn't have the motivation, we're probably not here, right? If I didn't have the motivation,
yeah,
we may not be here.
Yeah,
so
probably.
Like,
there are some benefits that come to the motivation. Like, here's something that happened Friday. I had a flat tire. What a horrible experience, and I was in the downtown of a city of 50,000 people. And I looked over there, and there was a tire shop. I said, well, okay, I guess me and my car will limp over there and see if we can get us a tire. And walked in. I was treated very inhospitably. I was told someone would help me in a half hour. And some fellow comes walking in. And he turns out to be truly one. I mean, the funniest thing was, he said, so what you going to do after you get your tire fixed? I said, I'm going to go home and have a drink. He said, I got some beers in a cooler in my truck. I'll bring us one in here. Now, in my world, that is how you treat a customer. Oh, my goodness, that's how you treat a customer. We're going to go out for drinks tomorrow night. I dropped by today, and we were talking about a variety of things, including all the UFOs on Fox News and CNN. And, you know, I just watched him do an absolutely fantastic job. He also said, I'm a fourth-generation retailer, and my family knows how to treat people. Well, boy, they do. And I like that. Now, I like that experience. Maybe some people wouldn't. But I liked that experience, the kindness that I was shown. And I said, you know, that's the way I like to treat my clients. It is. I mean, today, and this is how I'll close this, my answer to this section. I had a lady who was the first lady I ever sold life insurance to. And she called up complaining about something, but I really listened. And I said, you know, I need to go see her. And she was about to cry because of the way her sisters treated her and all this stuff. And I sat there for 1 hour, and I let her know that I care about her. And I'm going to let her cook me some fried cabbage next week. And she's thrilled that I'm going to come up there because she expected some help and she got it. I was a good listener for her. And that's all she needed, and everything was okay. I'm going to have to keep a watch on her because I want her to stay in good mental spirits. She's a nice lady. She's 80 years old. She doesn't have anybody. One of her sisters just died about 9-10 months ago, and she still hasn't gotten over that. But it made me understand that you've got to, if you really treat people well, and if you keep, I mean, I could have said, listen, I'm tired, I got to go, but that wasn't the right thing to do. What I had to do was I had to take some time with this lady. She needed someone to talk to. And whether I felt like it or not, and I didn't, I was tired. I made myself do it, and I got a great reward of an even better friend. So that's my last comment on this question. And I can't wait to hear what Tori's got to say.
Yes, Dr. John, thank you. I have a quick question for you, a little unrelated, but which tire went flat? Because I'm dying to know, because I also had a flat tire on Friday morning as well.
It was the front right tire.
Mine was the back left, so I guess we were pretty opposite there, but pretty funny we had similar experiences on that.
It was like, oh, no. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. John. Tori, thank you for your patience. How are you doing, and what are your thoughts on this question?
Well, I'm good. I would say, so I've given this a lot of thought, actually, other times. Why am I so much harder on myself than I am on other people? And I think what I've come up with is that I know what I'm capable of. And I know that a lot of the time I am splitting my focus on a lot of different things and that I could do better. Like, I always feel like I could do better. And I'm pretty honest with myself about it. Like, generally, I could do better if I gave it a little more attention, a little more focus, maybe limited the amount of things that I have going on sometimes to, just give myself a little breathing room, right? But, I know what I'm capable of. I know I'm not necessarily doing my 100% best all of the time. And that somehow really bothers me. And for everyone else, I can cut them slack because I don't know what they're capable of. And I don't know what their comfort level is with what they're putting into whatever it is they do. And I genuinely feel that it's not my place to judge what they, deem to be right for them in any given moment. So all I can do, the only person I can judge is myself. And I do judge myself. I do it pretty harshly sometimes. But it comes from a place of knowing that I can do better and I want to do better. And I don't know, I guess a lot of that stems from my childhood as well, but maybe for different reasons than yours, Matt, where in my case, I wanted to get recognition and stuff from teachers and whatnot, and it served me well, and it felt good to get accolades and whatnot. So it was always pretty much self-driven because I liked the attention, I liked the kudos and things like that from teachers and other community members who just thought I was just such a sweetheart. Like, that just really filled me up. It was nice to be recognized for things, and so I just kind of kept going with that, and it's never really steered me wrong. However, with the being too hard on myself thing, I would say that I would like to spend a lot less time being so hard on myself, because, I mean, there's always more work to be done, and it's sort of the perpetual motion machine that we're always going to find something new to improve about ourselves. So maybe we shouldn't be quite so hard on ourselves about everything, and give ourselves a little bit of the grace that we would extend to absolutely everyone else. So that's my take on that question.
Thank you, Tori. My question is, to an extent, would be, when you say you're almost looking for external validation, do you feel like part of that in some is maybe a level of seeking worthiness outside of yourself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've done that a lot. Sought external validation to tell me that I'm worthy or I'm good enough. I had a lot of pretty traumatic things happen in my childhood that told me stories that are not necessarily true, but from a kid's perspective, it's how I made sense of the world. It's how I made sense of events that were happening to me, was that somehow these things completely outside of my control were my fault. And so I spent a great deal of my childhood thinking that I was responsible, that somehow I was not a good enough person, sister, friend, whatever, daughter, you know, and that if I could just be told enough times that I'm good enough, that I'm smart enough, that I'm strong enough, then maybe I would believe it. And yeah, that's been a pretty hard struggle for me, and I think that a lot of people have a similar struggle, and it doesn't matter the background. It's like we all have these stories that play over and over that tell us about our worthiness, and a lot of times it's coming from a child's logic, and we just have to kind of reexamine it as an adult and say, hey, you know what, maybe that doesn't make sense anymore. Maybe it never did. You know, the same way that we would help a child understand something that happened to them and sort of apply that to ourselves as well, kind of have that conversation with our own inner child, so to speak, and say, hey, you know, that's not really a true perspective. You're looking at it from a limited information point of view, and it could certainly be expanded and healed to a great extent just by looking at it in a fresh way.
Thank you, Tori. That was some really beautiful and well described answers, and I really, really appreciate that. And I think that's where we're about to head next, about that unworthiness. But as we were leading in, when opening this topic about insecurity and unworthiness, Before we go to that, I want to just provide my answer. And it's two parts. Number one, I validate completely what you were saying, Tori, about, like, I know my abilities. There might be a perception that some abilities in some areas might be higher than other people. As such, maybe I hold myself to that higher standard. It's also like, if I know I can get something done or believe that I can get it done, well, I expect myself to do that, whereas maybe there wouldn't be that expectation for someone else, for example. I think the other thing, though, too, is it's about acceptance. And, you know, it probably will tie into this next category about unworthiness. But there is always this desire, whether it's like with Dr. John, with, you know, needing to get a certain grade, or with what Keith was saying about some familial traumas, there was always this, like, I need to do better. I need to do better so I can be loved, so I can be accepted, so I could be seen as great or whatever. It was always about looking outside myself, because that's what I had to do based on my upbringing. And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that that was a situation that I've had to be in, and unfortunately it's something that many people have to do. But I think it's being kinder with ourselves. You know, if you wouldn't treat your best friend that way, then don't treat yourself that way. Because when we hold ourselves to such a high standard, that also degrades our health as well. So with that said, I'd like to go on to this next subject about insecurities and unworthiness and how that relates to this main topic today. So my question is, how do you guys think that feelings of unworthiness, feelings of insecurities that we try to hide, may manifest in exuding a perfectionism or a false sense of confidence? So with that said, Dr. John, what are your thoughts on this question?
Okay. Do you mind going back over the last part of the question? I was hoping you'd ask Keith or Tori first. Go over the last part of the question again so that I make sure I understand it. And then I'll give it a go.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking that question. So it's like, okay, so we all have, you know, insecurities. We all have feelings of unworthiness. And how does that manifest as it relates to sort of portraying the outward image of being perfect or being overconfident or maybe quote unquote better than someone else? What do you see as the correlation there? Is that something that you've done? Is that something that you've seen other people do? And why do you think that we do that?
Okay, I'm going to give a backwards answer. I always felt that I had to perform up to a certain standard. And if I didn't, I was kind of, well, I was not cool. I was, you know, that I wasn't doing what I should. So that's what I learned. That's what I learned. But it turns out it was a good thing to learn as I grew older. And I was in several situations at work where I knew I was doing the right thing. No question about it. It gave me leadership skills that regardless of what people thought, if I was doing the right thing, I was just going to do it. And I think that is something, I mean, I see all these doctoral and master's programs on leadership. I think they're a fraud. You don't learn leadership from a doctoral program online. You learn leadership by doing the right thing regardless of what other people say. And I think you have to, if you're any kind of a human being, you have to do the right thing. I didn't have to sit around with Miss Betty Jean for an hour and watch her cry. That was important to her. And I felt like I showed a little bit of leadership because I don't like to see a lady cry, an 80-year-old lady cry. And I got her where she was feeling better. I couldn't have left her like that. I couldn't have done it. And I think leadership is trying to bring success into a situation. And that I don't know if I've answered your question or not, but I think the idea of leadership and getting to the success factor is important. Like today, I had a brand new and amazing business idea, and I called four people, and they all said, "You're crazy." And you know what I said to myself? They're all wrong. So I called them back 4 hours later, and they said, "Well, that's not such a bad idea after all." And I said, I think that's the leadership role that I was taking is the truth. Keith might remember what this is, and Keith, we will not discuss it until later. But no, the fact is, people sometimes think my ideas are crazy, but they're not, because I think it all boils down to leadership. and can you lead people to a good direction? All right, so I think I kind of got back to an answer for you. Okay, done.
Thank you, Dr. John.
And Matt, I, being a psychic, I was reading your mind, and you're saying, "What did he just say?" I'm just teasing.
Thank you. So, Dr. John, you definitely took that in a direction I was not necessarily anticipating, but you did add some really important content, and I think that it's important that think about it. It's when we sometimes people think we're crazy until we're not. People sometimes think we're crazy until we're not. We go out, we create something that is brand new. Once we push past our own fears, our own projected feelings of perfectionism, we go out, we take the action, we chart a brand new path. And then that path shows success. And then those same people who thought you were crazy, those same people who thought you were eclectic or eccentric, now come to you and ask you, how'd you do it? Think about the most successful people, quote unquote, in this world. I'm sure people thought that of Mark Zuckerberg, of Oprah, of so many entrepreneurs and innovators had that same thought. So I really, really love that. And I'd love to throw that back to you, Dr. John, see if you have any further thoughts on what I just added.
Okay. I'll take this opportunity to talk about a huge failure that I had. I had a dream. It was a great idea of restarting a business. I had met the business owner maybe 15 years ago, and I had that business. Okay, I'll go ahead and say it. I don't care. Has anybody ever heard of the old sports rag called Leonard's Losers?
I have
probably not. Okay, what it was Leonard predicted the loser of college football games, and he was insanely popular, and he was looking for someone to take over the Clemson franchise, and they identified me as an entrepreneur in Clemson, and I didn't do it. They wanted too much money, and so here I am, you know, probably 12, 15 years after all that. And I had this idea that we ought to do it again. And I spoke to some of my most trusted friends, and they said, that's stupid. You don't need to be doing something like that. When I missed the Clemson National Championship year, that would have been the biggest success I could have ever had. And it turned out to be the biggest failure that I ever had because I listened to people. And I don't even know why I asked them their opinion because they didn't really know about, you know, when I say a sports rag, you know, I'm talking about one of these things you pick up at the grocery store or whatever. That's what I'm talking about a sports rag. So I learned, like today, when I had this idea, I was centrally thinking about that, and I was saying, don't listen to anybody. You believe you have a good idea, let's go do it. And ultimately, people began to see my point. So you have got to believe in yourself. Because if you don't believe in yourself first, nobody will believe in yourself second. Matt, did you know that? Nobody will believe in you if you don't. So
absolutely. It goes back to how we talked about the last number of weeks. I'm sorry.
And I thought about this old experience that I had. And I guess it's in the area of leadership. And I said, you know what, I'm not going to let anyone tell me that this is a bad idea because I know it's a good idea. And then I started talking to people. I started talking to people on the West Coast. I started talking to people up north in New York, and all of a sudden everybody thought it was a good idea because I said, I'm not going to give up. I know it's right. And when you know it's right, you got to do it. I think that was a commercial. That was a television commercial. But it's about the truth. If you know it's right, do it. And if you know it's not right, don't do it. Be a, you know, just be, try to be true to yourself. Something my mother always told me. I thought she was crazy. She was one of the smartest women I ever met. You know, it's funny. It's funny, and I think every one of us will say that, you know, there's been some, at some point in our lives, that we have had people, our some relatives that really care about us, and we thought they were crazy, and they weren't. They were smart. They had been successful, and they kept on keeping on, and we learned that we should have listened to them more. So that's two thumbs up to my parents. Wish I'd listened to them better. Wish I still had them here. But that's okay. They taught me the best. They did the best they could with me. I was pretty a dumb dude. So I think that goes into leadership, and that goes into doing the things that you believe are right. Okay, so there you go. Next.
Absolutely. I love that. And it kind of goes back to sometimes it's not always necessarily what's right or what's wrong or what's perfect or what's not perfect, but following your own heart, following your own intuition, following what you want to do, what you believe, and following that vision, because that is the right decision. That is the most, quote-unquote, perfect decision, regardless of whether it's perfect or actually works out in actuality. So I absolutely love that, Dr. John. Tori, what are your thoughts on this question?
Oh, my goodness. How to not be long-winded with the answer. I think that it's a hard question. It's a hard question, Matt, for me. And I feel like it's sort of meandered around. I'm not really sure how to answer. I feel like I'm just taking it all in, everything that I've heard you guys talk about already, and just not quite sure.
Not a problem, Tori. We can possibly come back to you, but if you'd like to leave it at that, that's completely okay as well. Keith, what are your thoughts on this?
What's the question?
The question is, what are the we all have insecurities. We all have feelings of unworthiness, right? And a lot of us exude this sense of perfectionism to cover up a lot of those insecurities and a lot of those feelings of worthlessness. So what are your thoughts on why we do that? Is this, do you have an experience that you'd like to share with us personally, et cetera?
Insecure. Yeah, we do use perfectionism to cover up our insecurities. That's a good point. I've actually been thinking about that a lot the last few months. Coming to Wisconsin, my mom's husband, he's a smart guy, but you know, I can see through some people's bullshit, and a lot of people, they cover up their insecurities with a sense of perfectionism, or they cover it up with a fake grandiose idea of themselves. It's like they puff up their chest, but deep down inside they don't feel worthy, and they're afraid to feel that, and they don't ever look into why they feel that way, and they just like, you know what, screw that, I'm not going to address that, I'm just going to bypass that and puff up my chest because I need to put on a show for other people so they all think I'm big and bad. But that is kind of a hard question to answer, honestly. But I just take things day by day, and I think that the biggest way to cope with dealing with perfectionism and insecurities is to learn surrender to a higher power. In my yoga teacher training program, this was like 2 months ago, I was listening to one of the teachers talk, and they were talking about the importance of there's the yamas and there's the niyamas. The yamas, I believe, are the way that we go about treating ourselves, and the niyamas are the way that we go about treating others. And one of the yamas was surrendering things to God or a higher power. And it's bhakti. Yeah, bhakti, the path of devotion, where you give everything to God. You surrender it to a higher power. And that will help us to cope with our insecurities. That'll help us to cope with this perfectionism. As far as why it formed, I mean, if you look into it, there's so many different facets of this society. I mean, you know, we live in a sick culture. You know, it's unhealthy. I mean, we have so many mental disorders. You know, our family structures are broken up. Kids now, like I explained my story with dealing with traumas, and John and Tori talked about trauma too, just in different ways. As did you. We all talked about traumas, and we all have different ways to cope with trauma, and it's hard to just limit it to one thing, but ultimately it's just due to our sick culture. You know, we're not eating good quality food as children. We're not taught how to deal with our emotions in a healthy way, so we develop a sense of perfectionism, or we get insecure, and then we ultimately, you know, all of us strive for equilibrium, which is why, you know, they talk about the law of attraction, and the universe is a mirror. And if you have something inside of you that you haven't dealt with yet, it's going to keep showing up in your life. In my life, it always shows up as in women. It always shows up in the kinds of women that I attract, and the way that they behave towards me, because I don't feel like I'm worthy of, you know, being treated in a healthy way. There's a deep belief within myself that tells me that, and that's always reflects itself into the kinds of women that I attract. You know, I feel like I have to prove myself to them, because I don't feel like I'm worthy of just being, you know, even though it's even just by being alive, ultimately you're worthy. You know, I'm worthy to breathe the same air that you are. And there's anything deeper than that's just nonsense. So that's a good question. It's really deep. It's hard to answer in a simple way, but I feel like I said what I've needed to say, and I'm thankful for the good question, for the good people on the show tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. I think you really answered that very succinctly, and I know that there are numerous aspects to that question, and I really love basically a lead into what I'm about to add to this topic. And I love how you brought up about faith or putting your belief in either other people or a higher power, if that's what you choose to believe or you believe. And I feel like that's a lot of what I struggled with when I was younger, you know, with the struggles that I endured in my life as a PTSD survivor, as feeling, being in this hyper-individualistic culture, to striving for perfectionism, being a man. I feel like when you put all those elements together, there was always this sense of, I have to do everything on my own. I have to be successful on my own for myself. And when you have all those values or all those beliefs inside, you don't feel as though you can be part of being fully vulnerable. We're going full circle here with what we try to do here. Because if you show that area of weakness, quote unquote, perceived weakness, only perceived, then somehow you may not be promoted. You may not be able to be seen in the same light. And I found that when I become more worthy inside, I've had less desire to exude this sense of false perfectionism. And for me, and it was a coping strategy, but for me, as I talked about bowling, for example, I bowled competitively. And for me, it was a coping strategy. I was able to survive, really, through the joyous competitions that I would have, through the connections I made within the context of the sport. And part of how I was able to do that was shoving all the nonsense and trauma that was not being dealt with in other aspects of my life away. When I was in the bowling center, I was Matt the bowler, right? And Matt the bowler, that aspect of me had this perfect persona. And it was just a way to just cope, survive. And I guess it was because I felt a sense of aloneness. I felt like I had to do that. I had to show that side of myself. So I think I think we had some really great ideas on this, and I think we've really dove really deep into this. And I want to just end tonight with asking a quick question here. Simply, we've talked about some really important ideals here on the various subjects of perfectionism, unworthiness, et cetera. What's one takeaway or one goal that you guys would like to take moving forward and apply in your lives? And I'd like to yield it to whoever would like to go first.
Matt, I got a good question for you. Very, very serious question.
Yeah,
is
go for
the
it.
Personality Matt the bowler, is he related to Bob the Builder by chance?
So I'm curious. I'm going to throw back to you, Keith. So, why? How did that even come up in your mind?
I don't know. It just did. It popped to my head when you said Matt the bowler. I just had like this idea of you like sitting there in the bowling alley, like holding up bowling ball, just walking down the alley and be like, boom, and just throwing a strike or something. And I was just thinking about Bob the Builder for some reason. I don't know. And then I just wanted to pose. I was waiting for you to finish so I could pose this wonderful question to you.
Well, I can tell you one thing that I don't do a whole lot of like manual labor, so you definitely won't see me holding a wrench or whatever else that Bob the Builder actually holds up. But like, dude, I love that question. And but I'll roll bowling balls and I'll roll strikes for days. And you know me, I'm all about the boom and the boom, baby. So Keith, thank you for that question. And I'd like to just ask everybody. Last question round for the night is, what is a takeaway from tonight, and how can you apply that in your life moving forward as a good goal? So So who would like to go first?
I already popped a wonderful Bob
Mr.
the Builder
Bob,
question.
Mr. Bob the Builder question.
Bob, we can call him Bob the Bowler now. I feel like the biggest thing to take out of this is to be easier on yourself. You know, learn to accept that, you know, we're perfectly imperfect. You know, that's part of this, that's part of this creation, you know. We're all stuck in this together. It doesn't matter how many books you read, how intelligent you think you are. Life is always going to have that unknown factor to it. It's always going to have that. And there's going to be situations that you're not going to know how to, you know, handle in the way that you'd want to handle. You know, we talked a little bit about living from your heart. If you live from your heart, you're never going to be wrong. Yeah, you might make a wrong decision from an intellectual standpoint. You might make a mistake. But if you live from your heart, you'll learn from it. You'll grow from it. That's what this life is all about. It's all about growing as an individual. It's growing into the person that you want to be. And the person that you want to be isn't going to be holding on to all of this stress. They aren't going to be holding on to this anxiety. They're not going to be, you know what, stress and anxiety and perfectionism, like we talked about, they are a blessing to an extent. You know, it's just like everything else. There's a balance to it. It's learning how to turn something negative, like a perfectionism, into something positive, like turning that into, you know, taking that passion and throwing it into a business, or throwing that into, you know, like how you do it with your podcasts, you do it with talk shows, you do it with bowling. You're very passionate about these kinds of things. You've turned your perfectionism into a blessing to the world in some way. And I feel that that's very important for us to do moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Keith. I really appreciate all that wonderful content. Dr. John, what are your thoughts?
Oh, this is frightening. I get to go next. The goal is to keep doing what I think is right. I'm an entrepreneur by heart. And when I have an idea, I've learned to keep doing it. The prime example is the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, which is, and I must say, insanely popular. I knew it was going to work. And it went crazy. We have 500-600 people there every year. And I just know to be true to yourself. And if you think the goal is, if you think you have a good idea, do it with all your heart. Okay.
I love that, Dr. John. I love that.
Do it with all your heart, and have friends like Keith. He's become such a great friend. Have friends like Keith and anyway, and you and Tori. I always enjoy hearing what you've got to say on this show. So yeah, do it with all your heart. Now, like Tori. Tori said she's going to go to her retreat, and she's going to do yoga, and she's going to do massage, and it sounds like she's going to have, Tori, it sounds like you're going to have a wonderful, wonderful time, aren't you? Hello?
Tori, are you still with us, and what are your thoughts on this question here?
Well, it looks like she has dropped off. So, anyway, I know that she was looking forward to it, and I was going to say to her, Godspeed and do it with all your heart, because then it will be a great experience. So that's what I had to say to Tori.
Absolutely. And I love your answer, and that's a great way for me to lead into what I'm going to add for my answer. I feel like perfectionism is a lot about operating out of your head. But when you can break out of the confines that you create within your own self, when you can step out and be your true, vulnerable, authentic self, when you can be that leader, when you can take that vision of what you truly want to create, you do what's in your heart, what you're passionate about, what you truly believe in, regardless of what anyone says, anyone thinks, anyone does, then that's when you break out of that confine. That's when you break out of that shell. Because life is a blank canvas. There really is no perfect way to operate it. The perfect way to operate it is to follow your own passion, to follow your heart, to follow your gut, and do what feels right to you. And that is the right way to go about it. Because we're perfect by being imperfect. Because we're not human doings, we're human beings. And we gain our sense of maybe even being perfect through our mistakes, through learning from our mistakes. And remember that a lot of times in life that we end up learning far more, we end up growing far greater through our mistakes than through our successes. And that is how we become a more complete, perfect person. And that is something that I need to remember myself too, because like all of us probably said on this call, like we fall into that trap of worrying, of stressing, of being anxious to make that right choice or to be perfect. But really, truly, perfection comes from being human, from trying new things, and from following your heart. So with that said, I just want to say I thought we had a beautiful podcast, as we always have every single week. I am truly blessed for you, Tori. I'm blessed for you, Keith. I'm super blessed for you, Dr. John. And I hope everybody has a great night.
And we will see everyone next week, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Vulnerability Podcast. Join us again. Download it and tell your friends. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.